WNST Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are back in the Ville. Life is great. The 21228. If you're watching out on our Facebook Live or YouTube Live, we got sunshine in Catonsville here for the senator. Don
it's
Mulder.
Streaming in. Thanks for arranging this, guys.
Well, we always rearrange the musicians here. When I come in, I never know whether Jimi Hendrix is going to be sitting behind me. Today, it's Lennon and Aretha Franklin. And we thought for Aretha, we would bring you R-E-S-P-E-C-T. And I've even got some chicken and waffles here that I've worked through at State Fair that Don likes to take these pictures of me eating the food here.
You know, the senator's got a tight schedule.
I should have not just ordered a cup of coffee. I got to get one of those, too.
Third segment right here.
All right.
All right, man. By the people, of the people. All right. Well, so thank you for coming, and thank you for being a part of this. There's so many things. When Don and I started to do background on you, I mean, I know who you are. We voted for you, all that. Pakistan. Wow. Like, that's where it starts on the Wikipedia. And I'm like, this might be the most interesting guy, right? I mean, the Harvard thing, all these schools that I went to.
Yeah, listen, look. Pakistan does usually get people right. to take, you know, stop. Look, I was, my father's from Baltimore. He grew up here. He went into the Navy. And after the Navy, he went into the United States Foreign Service. He met my mom, who was the daughter of an English teacher. She became a Russian language and history expert. Anyway, they got married, and my father joined the Foreign Service, so I grew up many parts of different parts around the world. And born in Karachi, Pakistan, back to the United States, also lived in Turkey, India, and Sri Lanka. So,
how many languages do you have a command of enough to walk in and exchange, to order dinner, let's say?
Well, I know bad words, curse words, in about five languages, but that's about the extent of it right now.
You probably have used that skill.
And they can be quite universal, but no. But those, unfortunately, I picked up a little bit of language in each place. Yeah, again, the ones that you remember as a kid are all the ones that get you in trouble.
How does that, because as well as I know you, Senator, I told Nestor, I was surprised. I'm looking at the bio, I'm going, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, India. I didn't know that part of your background. When you look back, one of our theories here is that folks are really a composite of who they've been throughout their lifetime. When you look back, how did that experience of growing up not in the United States, how did that become part of who you are, form who you are?
Well, we would go back and forth. So we'd go overseas to a different post and then back to the United States. And I do think that experience helped sort of shape my views. So, number one, when you're growing up in different parts of the world, you can appreciate the fact that you've got people from different cultures, different religions, different races, and you can have a better understanding of how they perceive what we're doing here in the United States. At the same time, I will tell you, it gives you a great appreciation of the United States of America, because we do stand for these important principles of democracy and human rights. I think one of the big challenges we're facing today is, unfortunately, those sort of ideas are under assault from some of the highest levels in the government. But when you're overseas, you both see the incredible virtues of the United States. You also see that we've got to work harder to measure up to what we say we stand for, whether it's on human rights, civil rights, democracy. Those are important issues where we got to keep working here at home to live up to the standards that we're expressing overseas. But look, growing up, part of my life overseas, coming back in between, obviously lots of experiences that I do think are useful today.
Don and I talk about this all the time. I mean, I'm a kid from Dundalk, son of an immigrant Venezuelan. And in my adulthood, I have sought the world. You know, I have traveled all over the world. It's something I love doing, trying to get to Tokyo to see U2 later on in the year. Might cost me the Buffalo game, Don. But and Don and I have talked about this, how few Americans have a passport. And if they have, the furthest they've been is Niagara Falls or Cancun on a beach to really experience. I haven't been to Africa. That was something that would really shake my world, I'm sure. But I've been throughout Europe and Asia and Australia, South America. I'm South American of descent. And when you do go to other places, people here can say, well, America's the greatest country in the world, put the flag up and not have a passport. and it's more hollow if you haven't really experienced it and gone through customs in other places, right? I mean, I went to Cuba 20 years ago as an example on the baseball trip.
Yeah.
It's alarming.
Were
it's
you
alarming.
Part of that baseball trip, the Orioles trip?
I was the part they don't talk about. Yes, yes. That's back when I was a media member. That's another story altogether.
That's all right. But I do want to say something about Cuba, because one of my experiences in the Congress was going down to Cuba three times, because a constituent of mine named Alan Gross was the guy who was taken prisoner by the Cubans many years ago.
I remember this.
And on behalf of the Obama administration, we went down a number of times, Senator Pat Leahy and myself, to try to free Alan Gross. And finally, one of the great moments in my tenure in Congress was when we all boarded a U.S., one of the presidential aircraft, to fly down in the early morning hours to Havana to bring Alan Gross home. We went down with his wife. He'd been in prison for over 3 years at the time, and it was part of an agreement that was reached between the U.S. government and the Cuban government, which also opened the door to new relations back at the time. I mean, it's crazy that Americans cannot travel more easily to Cuba. Because if you go there, you'll find out the Cubans are all becoming little entrepreneurs. I mean, they're turning their homes into rental flats and, you know, rental apartments. And so we want more engagement with the Cuban people, and that will help open their economy. Anyway, you mentioned Cuba.
Well, when I went in fear, right? I went as a media member with the Orioles in 1999. It was a place no one I knew had been. There were men with machine guns on every corner in a militia way. Somehow I felt incredibly safe quickly, because they were wonderful too. And I think being an American and traveling now, you feel the difference in the world about the temperature of how people feel about America and Americans when you get off an airplane some other place and you did it 20 or 30 years ago. It's not as welcoming as it once was. And that should worry all of us universally. And to the heart of things, you being a man who grew up in other places, the safety of our people, we take it for granted. I mean, we really do. This generation certainly takes it for granted.
We do. Look, we have to engage in the world. And, you know, obviously there are going to be times when people around the world don't agree with our policies. But we should not go out of our way to diss other people, to disrespect others. At the same time, we need to, we need to stand up to the dictators around the world and promote those who support the values of democracy and human rights and rule of law. And unfortunately, that's all gotten turned upside down a little bit. And as a result, as you say, if you just look at surveys around the world, people do not hold the United States in the same high esteem and regard that they did a number of years ago. So, and that does impact our security.
Well, we're palling around with dictators, right? So that's a fundamental problem.
Yeah, palling around with dictators is usually not a good thing.
And suddenly having other countries issuing travel alerts for their citizens who may want to come to the United States.
And the alerts were, like, don't gather in large places, and be on alerts if you're in religious places and arenas and stadia. I was at the Ravens preseason game. There was definitely a different kind of presence, and that's where we are at this point. And I'm sure we'll get to guns, because that's we dive into that, because that's this week's news.
Well, as I was saying earlier, look, there's so much going on right now in this country that we need to address. It reminded me of James Carville saying it's like being a mosquito in a nudist colony. You just don't know where to start. I mean, there's so much stuff coming at us that whether it's guns, whether it's immigration, whether it's education, whether it's, making sure that we make the investments we need in our infrastructure. There's so much going on.
But the safety from the mosquitoes is the off, and the off is you. It's literally, it's a few of you representing so many of us. I just think we who have read the Mueller report and watched, just our jaws are at the challenge to our democracy that's being made here at this point, and needing you to be the off on the wall for the mosquitoes.
Well, let's talk for a second then about the Mueller report and the one finding that everybody can agree with, which is that the Russians interfered in our elections in 2016, and they interfered in 2016 in support of Donald Trump. Right?
I'm going to ask you that now, Senator. I'm going to push back a little bit on that. I'd like to think that's the one fact that everyone can agree on.
Everyone does not agree on that.
I'm not sure that that's true. I'm not sure, for example, that Sean Hannity agrees with that. I'm not sure that Tucker Carlson, who the other night goes on air and says that white supremacy is a hoax, that Tucker Carlson and their viewers agree with that. So
you're right. We may need to put a little.
Or that these murders are being taken out in his name. That these are people who clearly.
I'd like to think you're right.
In service of Donald Trump in some mind way, right?
Well, let me say first with on the Mueller report and that finding. I mean, you may need to put a little asterisk up there for Fox Late Night,
right.
But. Even those guys, they'll try and minimize the Russian interference, and they'll try to explain it away. But I think everybody has recognized. Let me just put it this way: everybody in the intelligence community, even under the Trump administration, recognized that in 2016 this happened. Anyway, I'm looking forward. I'm looking at the 2020. And Marco Rubio is a Republican senator from Florida, and I have introduced a bill. It's called the Deter Act. Very straightforward. What it says is that if we catch you, Vladimir Putin, screwing around in our elections again, you will face automatic, very severe economic sanctions. So not penalties on a few oligarchs, not just, you know, hitting a few of your buddies, but economic sanctions on your banking system, on your energy sector, something that will really hurt. We have bipartisan support for this. We are asking Mitch McConnell to take up this simple bill. We're trying to pass it in the coming months. And so I would hope that every American would support that idea, right? If we catch you interfering in 2020, there should be a price to pay.
Now, that
very
seems,
simple.
That seems very logical, very
but
simple.
But so far they have not agreed to take it up. So there you go.
That's where I think this is so helpful. Nestor always says we like to view these sort of as a social studies class and educate not only
he
us.
He was my social studies teacher I never had. I met him my first day of high school. He was my high school guidance counselor in 1982.
Is this true?
This is a true story.
It's a true story.
So Nestor views this as the social studies class he didn't have. But if we peel that onion back, Senator, help those who are listening, those who will be watching on Facebook, try to give us the four dummies version of why Congress isn't able to do anything. In other words, you talk about one of the things I notice when I look up what you've been up to. It's bipartisan effort after bipartisan effort after bipartisan effort. You're a guy who can work across the aisle. And we'll talk about them later in the show, some of the important things you're working on that are making a difference. So you've got these bipartisan efforts. You just said, what could be more straightforward? You mess with our elections, we're coming after you. Now, that's probably going to sit there. Educate people about how the Senate works and how when you have such support, something can just go to die.
So it's a fundamental question. I think what you've seen happen in Congress is Congress is, of course, Article 1 of the Constitution. It's supposed to be a separate branch of government. But more and more, and especially now under the presidency of Donald Trump, you see Republican members of Congress who are not voting and acting as, you know, independent representatives of their state. They're acting more as an extension of the Trump administration. And of course, the Trump administration's whole strategy is polarization, right? Let's try to divide the country on some of these big issues. And so that makes it really hard to come together in Congress and get a majority for some common sense issues. Now, you may ask, you know, why are they sort of reflexively following Donald Trump's lead? And the answer is that for most of them, their political threat is in the Republican primary. And so they're much more worried about being on the wrong side of Donald Trump or the wrong side of one of his tweets, because that means they get a challenge in the Republican primary and Donald Trump tweets and endorses their, you know, their challenger in the primary. And they don't want that. So even though they will quietly tell you that they think a lot of the actions this president's taking are sort of way off base, they refuse to stand up and be
how much of that's controlled by the money behind these candidates on that side? You know, my belief is, as a citizen is it's the money that dictates the election, that dictates the right side, that dictates what you can or cannot do on that side of the aisle. Clearly, on the left side of the aisle, we got 25 candidates all screaming to be president with different philosophies fighting amongst themselves. On the other side of the aisle, you're never, ever allowed to do anything but what, in my opinion, the donors say you must do. It feels like it flows that way.
I think that the money speaks in big ways on some of the big issues on the
guns.
Republican side. On guns, it's money, but it is also, I do have to say, on guns, in addition to the money, it is also a lot of small donors to the NRA around the country. And so it's not only, when it comes to guns, it's not only the money. It's the fact that you've got a lot of NRA members who are sending money into the national NRA. And I really urge those members to take a look at what the national NRA is doing, because the NRA has changed a lot over the last 30 years, from an organization that supported, sportsmen and, people like the Hunt.
Safety.
To an organization where the Washington, D.C. headquarters is now gold-plated. I mean, Wayne LaPierre makes millions of dollars. There's just been articles recently about these extravagant trips he's taken. And what they do is they scare their members all over the country into thinking that the Democrats and these others are going to come take away your guns. That's just not true. I support the Second. I recognize and respect the Second Amendment. I understand that. If you want to own a gun and you're a responsible gun owner, fine. But what the NRA does is say, a law like requiring your criminal background checks is really just a disguise to come take away people's guns. That's just not true.
Is it safe
but people
to say
will
that-
send in their dollars and then they'll vote. So I think a lot of the NRA members around the country, and there are lots of them, and they vote, are being totally misled by their Washington, D.C. headquarters.
Is there a point, like 30 years ago, the NRA, though, never wanted to see a 12-year-old child shot, right? Like, that was a fundamental 30 years ago. We don't want children to ever come, and now it's literally a free-for-all.
The NRA supported in the past, and I'm talking about the 1990s, supported some of the common sense gun safety measures. Now, you saw just the other day when Trump, bleated out that he might support, background checks. You had Wayne LaPierre on the phone to Trump, and all of a sudden you've got Trump backing off because they say, whoa, the NRA doesn't
Which
like this
idea.
Which
is the wash, rinse, repeat that we get
well,
from the president.
It just goes back to the beginning. The money
we get
controls
from the president.
The message.
Now, on stuff like the tax bill they passed in 2017, I'm telling you, if you take a look at that, huge giveaway to the wealthiest and big corporations. And as we've seen, what corporations are using those tax breaks for are not hiring more people or raising the wages of the people who work for them. They're using all that money for stock buybacks. We have like $1 trillion worth of stock buybacks. So you're a company, you got this new windfall tax break, and instead of investing more in plant and equipment and your employees, you're buying back your stock. And by the way, 30% of those stockholders are foreign stockholders, people from other countries who own U.S. stocks. So they're getting this big windfall, too. So that bill is one where the big donors made a big difference on the Republican side. In fact, the Republican Campaign Committee on the House side, they put it out. I mean, I don't think they wanted to get out. They said, we're not able to raise enough money right now because we haven't passed this huge tax break for our wealthy donors. They put it right out there. And so on stuff like that and some of the big banking bills, that's where on the Republican side you just see a mountain of money influencing the votes and the outcome.
Now, we're going to do a whole segment on guns and gun safety and what can and can't happen.
Oh, I want a segment on Russia. Come, please.
Well, I want to jump back to Russia. I know we are coming up on a break, but I want to jump back to Russia because of its and the Mueller report and what you said again, Senator, about it being common sense and the effect that it has on the American voter when they see Congress not being able to act. I want to revisit that again on the most simple common sense kind of measure. Are there structural changes that we need in the United States Congress to make a difference in that area. How do we move beyond just throwing our hands up, being frustrated, putting a post on Facebook? What do we need to do to get Congress working again so that you can roll up your sleeves and get important things done?
In the end of the day, Don, what you need is you need voters supporting candidates, elected officials who want to get things done and work across party lines. Because if voters reward division, if they reward polarization, if they reward those who refuse to try and find common ground or compromise, then that's what you get. And the problem you've got right now is Trump is essentially has a strategy of division right. and polarization. And so you have Republican senators following them. So I really have to appeal to voters. I don't think there's, for example, a specific rules change
filibuster
that can fix this.
React to the filibuster.
Okay.
Keep it or get rid of it.
So this is going to be something that everyone's going to have to review after this next election. I should first say that getting rid of the filibuster is only meaningful if one party controls both the Senate and the House and the White House. Because if you get rid of the filibuster in the Senate, but you had a, you know, if you had a Republican House, they would block it. So the question with the filibuster is, should you go to a system in the Senate where every single vote is a pure majority vote? Now, the whole purpose of the filibuster is to try to actually generate the kind of bipartisanship that you're talking right. about, right? That's the whole purpose of it. If we come to a place where that can never happen, then maybe you talk about getting rid of the filibuster. I will say when you get rid of it, there are some protections that we would have really been sorry to lose in the past 2 years when you had Trump in the White House, Republican domination of the House and the Senate. So if we didn't have a filibuster in the Senate, they could have done a huge amount of damage on issues from immigration to a whole range of issues where with the majority vote, they could have just pushed stuff right through the Senate. And so we just have to think carefully about that. I do want to say one thing, which is that we are able to get some important measures done on a bipartisan basis. I don't want to leave this portion of our discussion suggesting nothing happens, because you do hear about the things that are most controversial. But when it comes to, for example, reforming our veterans care system, we had overwhelming support for that. When it came to some criminal justice reform, a very important measure, it's called the First Step Act. It was to redress some of these outrageous inequities in sentencing policy, where people were sentenced much more harshly for crack cocaine compared to powder cocaine, and second chance opportunities, returning citizens. We were able to pass that. So there are measures that we can get together and pass. Taking on the opioid epidemic, you had bipartisan support for an important national investment there. So opioid epidemic response, veterans, and again, some of the criminal justice reform, we need to go farther. But there were some success stories in the past. But on the big issues that are usually debated most hotly,
and get the press,
where you've got to find some kind of compromise, that's where it's been really hard to move forward.
Great spot, I think, Nestor, to stop going to a break.
Does this mean I get to eat my waffle?
You get to eat your waffle. We get to thank our sponsors. What? Jennings State Fair.
Oh,
Aretha,
absolutely.
John Fadley's.
We're going to be down to Fadley's next week as well. So we got a lot of stuff happening. Baltimore Positive. Senator Chris Van Hollen here. Don Moeller is here. We're all out on Baltimore Positive. We are WNST.net, AM 1570 from State Fair, the 21228, where life is great. We're back for more right after this.